Welcome to the fifth preseason Your Supercoach Coach podcast. This week I'm joined by Mark or FB Donkey.
G'day everyone.
And Faz.
Hello.
We have three more preseason shows scheduled after this one. That's up to the final lockout, not including the GWS Sydney game. So we'll try and do the rookies and rucks just before that first lockout. This week we have the backline mid-price and premiums for you. Next week we're planning to do the forward line mid-price and premiums. And in the last week before final lockout where we set our whole team, we'll be doing remaining rookies that we didn't cover in week three and the midfield premiums and mid-prices. So that's our schedule for the rest of the preseason. We did anticipate doing rucks this week. So sorry for you guys who were anticipating that, but we haven't got quite as clear a picture as we probably would want before giving some solid advice. So we're waiting on that. We'll jump straight into the content because there's obviously quite a lot to cover with looking at all the most solid backline premium and mid-priced options. So why don't we kick us off with Brendan Goddard? I'm assuming that all of us have him locked.
Yes, I certainly do. He's been in my team all preseason, although I know some coaches have taken him out after he looked a little bit average in the couple of NAB games that we saw him. We were at that game, Marcus. What did you think about Goddard?
Yeah, I know a lot of people talked predominantly that the most concerning thing was that he was fumbling a lot and that his body language was poor. I did read probably a bit too much into it after that game. He's still on my team, but I guess fumbles, you can probably account that to him not having played too many practice games yet. Hopefully he picks things back up, but I'm not expecting to see that competition dominant Brendan Goddard, who averaged 125 from 2 years ago, but I still think he's a lock for most sides.
Yeah, I think the only reason you consider not picking him would be just his price being too high, but whereas in years gone past he's been sort of massive step above anybody else in the back line, this year he's only, you know, 12,000 above Heath Scotland, who I think is the next most expensive. So I'd still expect him to be the number one defender scorer. So for me, that means you've got to lock him in.
So talking about Scotland, he is, as Faz said, the second most expensive, but he's very consistent. And from his NAB Cup game so far, he does actually look like a premium who is going to hold his average or at least stay premium, at least 100 plus, if not quite as high as his 2011 season. I know we did cover him last week and I did say I think he's 32. It's a bit uncomfortable picking him, but do any of you have him in your draft teams or has he come in and out? I know he made my draft team, I think, at one stage during preseason, so he is in my considerations.
I've brought him in a couple of times briefly, but he shares a bye with Goddard and Deledio and the Hawks players as well, so that could be a problem come the bye time during the year, but he's been very impressive in the NAB so far.
Yeah, well, the main reason I've got Scotland in my team is because of the team that he plays for, and in our, I think, our first podcast of this year, we all predicted Carlton to be a big riser up the ladder this year. So I'm just keen to get sort of as many Carlton players into my team as possible. And we all know that the midfield is a much tighter squeeze. With most people looking at only probably three premiums, it's hard to fit a Murphy, a Gibbs or a Judd in there. So I've at this stage got Scotland sitting as my second defender. And, you know, primarily because I think Carlton will have such a good year, meaning they'll win a lot of games and score a lot of points.
So that brings us to the next one, I think, Faz. If you've got Scotland as your second defender, do you have Deledio in your team?
Do not at this point. Probably a very unpopular move to be leaving Deledio out, considering he has that mid-defender dual eligibility and he is a pretty prolific scorer. They're also saying he's going to spend more time in the midfield this year than he has in previous years. My only reason really is that he has had some sort of injury interruption. So I'm really being sort of pretty steadfast on that rule this year, in that if a player has had an interrupted preseason, I'm not going to consider them. Last year we talked a lot about Paul Roos had made that comment saying that only a very select few players can have a really strong season without a full preseason. So for me, I don't think Deledio will be up to the tremendous amount of running that's required of a midfielder. Don't see his scoring jumping up immensely, but I guess you guys probably both do, given I expect that you've got him in your team.
Yep, he's not playing this week against Geelong, but he's almost definitely going to play next week to get some match practice in, which is, you know, as expected. They did say 3 or 4 weeks when he did it, but I think he's already back to running, or he had already been back to running. So I think he only missed 2 weeks of running, so his fitness shouldn't be too bad, because I think he had a flawless preseason up to that point. I probably see Delidio as, you know, even with a limited preseason or slightly interrupted preseason, as capable of still being a premium backline player. Probably not going to spend as much midfield time, especially at the start, as we initially thought. I think at the start, a lot of people had him locked, especially when there was talk that he'd play a lot more midfield time this year. But I still think he's going to be premium quality for our backlines, and he's still a very consistent player. I don't see that changing, so he's in my team for now.
Yep, also in my team, and it probably is him versus Scotland that I'm picking between. I just think that if he does move into the midfield, he's easily got another 10 points improvement, where I struggle to see that coming from Scotland. He hasn't missed a game in 4 years. The concern would be this is his first soft tissue injury, so it could happen again, and Richmond do have a really tough start to the year with some really tough games in the first 5 or 6 weeks.
So the first three players we've talked about all have round 13 buys, and one goes round 12 is Heath Shaw, playing obviously for the Collingwood Magpies, who I think most people are expecting to have a fairly strong season. So again, similar to my points about Scotland, if you're looking to maximise the players in those top few teams, Heath Shaw is a player that a lot of people are looking at. He also comes in a little bit cheaper than those other three at 546. Marcus, I think you've been a Heath Shaw fan in the past. Expecting you've got him in your team.
Yeah, he's in my team at the moment. I think we did talk about him in one of the preseason shows so far. Not much has changed, especially since he's actually had a very strong NAB Cup showing so far in the two mini games and last week against Melbourne. The thing not to read too much into is that halfback flankers don't really get tagged during these games, so they get to run the ball out of defense pretty much without much opposition. I know Hearn had a really good game previously, and there's a player that we're going to talk about in a bit, but just remember not to read too much into the form of defenders, or specifically the quarterbacks, if you'd like, of the team during the NAB Cup series, because they all go pretty much untagged and score pretty well as a result. But certainly Heath Shaw is in my team at the moment. He's not as locked as I'd previously thought, because there are a few more options that bobbed up. Mark, how have you seen it? Is he still a lock for you? Or?
Yeah, absolutely a lock for me. I don't see the extra fantasy defenders that you're talking about, but maybe you can enlighten me over the next little bit. My main concern with Shaw would be that he hasn't played 22 games since 2007, and the most since then he's only 19 in 2010. Like you said about the being tagged thing, I think that's a good point, especially with Davis not there. He's the obvious one that they're going to go to, but I think that we've seen in the last couple of years that Shaw is able to break the tag better than he used to be able to, so we shouldn't see him go up and down quite so much as we have in the past, and he looks great in the preseason. And with Collingwood going to do so well again this year, you'd expect you want to get a few of the players into your team if you can.
Yeah, I think of the halfbacks across the competition, I mean, there are some like Goddard that float a lot across the ground, but Shaw plays quite strictly in that position. He does go onto the wing a bit, but out of them all, Shaw, as you said, Mark, has improved his consistency. I judge as one of the most, or if not the most consistent halfback in the comp, and especially playing for Collingwood, the points do flow. So onto a Hawthorn halfback player, Grant Birchall. He's picked up a lot of steam in fantasy circles in recent weeks. Do you guys have him in your teams at the moment?
Certainly not in my team, mate, but I do know some Hawthorn supporters that would be a bit upset that you're even bringing him up, because they think they've got their little secret here in Birchall. He is an improving player. He was a high draft pick. He's now in his seventh season, averaged 94 last year, increased his possession count, and apparently trained the house down over the preseason, and in a lucrative role for the Hawks, really. So you wouldn't be surprised if he averaged 100 over the course of the year.
Yeah, well, they play a very high possession style of football at Hawthorn, and you'd expect that to continue this year.
Yep. Another Hawthorn player that we're all looking at is Matt Suckling, and I know we've done Birchall v Suckling to death now, but I think a lot of people seem to have firmed up on Birchall in recent weeks. Does that mean Suckling is ruled out of the equation, or...?
Yes, I think so, because if you've already got Goddard and Delidio or Scotland, and then you add Birchall to the mix, then you've already got three players from round 13 by in your back line. You couldn't add Suckling as well, I don't think, and Birchall looks the most likely out of the Hawthorn to score well, so I think you'd probably pick Birchall if you were going to pick one of them.
Yep, and there are a few Fremantle defenders, Broughton, Duffield and Subin, who are all under fantasy consideration. But we're going to talk Broughton now, and if we have time, maybe Subin and Duffield later. He has been playing a lot more midfield time in the NAB Cup so far. last year was touted to have moved there, and a lot of coaches got frustrated when they started with him and that move didn't eventuate due to injuries. This preseason in the NAB Cup, he's played, I think, all but maybe one half in the midfield, and I think he picked up 20 plus touches last week. It is still the NAB Cup and teams do trial things, but under Lyon, it does seem like Broughton is set for a midfield role. Does that mean he's a lock at 500,000? Because he did average, you know, 95 or something in his first season of AFL.
Sure, I think he averaged like over 120 when he played a five-game stretch in the midfield last year. So that does make it very enticing. I think it's still very up in the air about exactly what's going to happen with Broughton. He looks one of the better picks going into this year, though, in an improving Fremantle side in his fourth year. Wouldn't be surprised if he averaged 100+.
Yeah, and you said we would potentially talk about him later, but I think Subin's return to the team is going to help Broughton be freed up for that midfield role, given that Subin plays a similar role to the one that Broughton played last year. Yep. But I guess we'll move on now to another player from out west, is Shannon Hearn from West Coast. He's had some impressive form in the NAB Cup from what I've heard. I don't actually have Foxtel myself, so I haven't seen much of it. So does one of you two want to fill me in on how Shannon Hearn has been playing?
Yeah. Again, you know, halfbacks don't get tagged, and we all know what Hearn is capable of. So he did have a really impressive showing, particularly in the mini games, but did play pretty well. Is that correct, Mark?
Yes, West Coast have looked really good so far, and Hearn has been a catalyst for that. I think he had 13 kicks in the first mini game. He should be a fantasy star, but like you said, he's been tagged. I've heard some talk that he's been training a bit more with the midfield group this year, probably to boost his endurance and maybe give him a way to break the tag as well, because what was happening last year was they were sort of putting a player on him and then dragging him right down to the defensive goal line, so he couldn't really be as effective with his kicking. But at 450,000, he's a bit of an unknown quantity about what he could accomplish, because he could have quite a high average. I probably would have expected him to get that average last year for West Coast when they improved so much, but that didn't happen. Still a decent chance that he could do really well this year. Odd fact, he has never played more than 15 games in an even year, and this is 2012, so he's played 22 games in all the odd years and hasn't had much of a run in the even years. So if you're superstitious, might not be a great fact for Shannon Hearn. Moving on to the next player, and that is Chris Yaron. He had a breakout season last year. I watched the game against the Bulldogs on the weekend, and although he didn't seem to get a lot of the ball, when he did, he's a real smooth mover and he's brilliant to watch. One of those players that you could really get behind and support. He does look like a really exciting footballer to watch. Averaged 87 last year. I'd be surprised if he averaged more than 95 this year.
I'd say you'd be expecting a bit of natural improvement, though, wouldn't you? Last year was his first season playing that defensive role. I'd be expecting definitely an upward movement in his scoring.
I think one thing to keep in mind is that Carlton's forward line stocks have been bolstered a lot. Cruiser's coming back, Hampson's obviously natural improvement, and Waite's returning as well. Probably going to be easier to deliver the ball into the forward line. I know it's a small fact and some might discount it, but with Yaron and his long kicking, as a lot of halfbacks do, that they can bomb it long into the square or into that area, and if it doesn't pan out, I think you don't get as many points. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah.
So obviously, with more marking forwards, there are less chance for interceptive marks to come in. I know that's affected halfback players in the past, like Mackie and Graham. So obviously, that's going to help just with having a better forward target. It might not net a lot of points per game, but you think if it even affects, you know, 4 points per game, and he's already at 85 without natural improvement, just the fact that they're better marking targets might take you to 89. Again, this is just a potential theory, but something to think about, that they have better marking targets and they are moving up the ladder. Paired with natural improvement, he's a decent selection in my eyes. Whether I'm actually going to pick him is another thing, but yeah, I have considered him.
He's a brilliant finisher, great footballer to watch, and should be a ripper in a few years. The next player we're going to look at is from the Hawks, Sean Burgoyne. He has averaged 115 for Port Adelaide. That was about 6 or 7 years ago now when they were a good side. Has struggled probably since moving to Hawthorn. Hasn't averaged 100 since he got there. Last year played a lot of lockdown roles in the back half, which affected his scoring, and he only averaged 80. So as a result, he's priced at 430,000, and in improving Hawks, he might be a fantasy option if you can get some midfield time.
I guess the only problem with his selection, and I do like him as a potential option, especially with that mid-def eligibility, is that I don't really see their lineup or their dynamic necessarily changing too much between last year and this. I do think he's a better midfield player than some of the other guys that they have in there. He is an excellent extractor of the ball, but I think he's a better player, a better utility than a lot of the other midfielders. And because of that, he might be forced to play that role similar to Bartel week to week for the team, whether that be moving from half back, being a forward option occasionally, or as Mark said, playing occasional lockdown roles. That's the only concern, and I guess I'm not seeing too much that indicates that that might change.
You'd think, though, if he could score like Bartel can, then he would be a lock in defense.
Yeah, but Bartel is a Brownlow medalist. On to a player who injured himself recently. But the forgotten man. Yeah, Jack Grimes did his shoulder, but it wasn't too serious. So he's back into considerations again.
Is he really?
Yeah, is he really? That's a good question to ask. I guess just the fact that he had yet another injury scare probably will scare most people off from actually picking him. I know he has been floating in and out of my team, but well and truly scared off by now. If Lady Luck clearly isn't on his side, it wasn't a soft tissue or anything, he just landed awkwardly. Just doesn't have good run on the board, and with his existing soft tissue injury history, I think I'm going to give him a pass.
Yeah, well, even if he was selected in the team, you'd be worried he's going to do something in the pre-game warm-up or something, the run he has with injuries. So we'll move on to another guy who also hasn't had too flash a run with injuries in the last year at least. It's Brian Lake. If you remember back to fantasy seasons gone by, he was one of the highest scorers in the league with his intercept marks across the Footscray backline. And also he just racked up the possessions on a number of occasions. I remember him getting around the 40 mark. And this year he comes in at 286,000 after a fairly injury interrupted year. Preseason has been late to start, but I haven't heard of any setbacks. What are your guys' thoughts on Brian Lake?
Yeah, well, I know he hasn't had quite as strong a preseason as the rest has. Like you said, he started late. I think they also had to sort of transition him slowly back into full intense training on the weekend. His first half was very, very strong. And when I was watching him play, I was thinking this was one of the best fullbacks in the game at the moment. But then the second half just completely died. He just ran out of legs.
I think that was because he was subbed off in the second half, Matt.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
That'll do it.
That's probably why he didn't see him. He did, like, he's probably his first quarter and a half were really, really good. And then, just the last half of the second quarter, Hampson did outmark him a couple of times. But I think it was only a minute or so into the game where he pushed Hampson under the ball and took a great mark against him. And you're like, wow, Lake's back. And then he ran up forward and set up a really good inside 50 for a goal and really looked exciting and to be a really strong player as well.
I saw a bit of a play.
He did. My concerns a little bit are that Morris is injured at the moment. I think he's due back in the first 10 rounds or so, but not really early. And now Williams is out for 4 months.
Yeah,
so so now he's going to have to play a lockdown defender role. Now, obviously, he's scored well playing that in the past, but there's going to be very little room for him to sort of open up and get a bit of freedom. So whether that affects his scoring or not, but at 280,000, I don't think he's likely to be a fail pick. He should average at least sort of 70, you would think.
The other player from Western Bulldogs who had an injury interrupted season last season and really the season before that as well is Ryan Hargrave. He's come straight back into consideration with strong NAB Cup form. Again, he's a halfback player who is obviously not getting tagged, so his numbers do look very good, but priced at his price at around 280 as well, and having previously, I think he managed a Supercoach average of 97, he's a very, very tempting option. Who do you guys see as the better of the two, Lake or Hargrave? Can you go both? Or should you avoid these picks completely?
What do you think, Buzz?
To me, it's probably a bit unfair, but I see Hargrave as a little bit of a flash in the pan in that he did average 97 back in 2009, but just over his last 5 years, that's his only year with an average above 80. So when you compare that to Brian Lake, who has averaged sort of 101, 92, 93 and 105 in the 4 years preceding 2011, I like that history of high scoring better than, you know, Hargrave's one impressive year.
You make a very good case there, I think, Faz. I have personally got Hargrave in at the moment and Lake out, but most of the preseason I've been a pretty big Lake fan and thought he'd be a pretty good pick. Reasoning on Hargrave was he looked really good in the first couple of games. The Bulldogs seem to have changed their game style a little bit to be a bit more like Hawthorn were last season. So as a result, you'd expect their halfback players to boost their scoring counts and be better fantasy players for us. So my main concerns over Hargrave would be, I think he's about 32. But I would think there's a very good chance he'll get off this preseason. And he might not be the one that gets tagged. You've got Murphy down there as well, who's probably a more damaging player. Okay, the next player that we want to look at is Marty Clark from Collingwood, who had his first game back on the weekend where he was subbed on after half time. He didn't play the first game because I think he picked up some sort of injury, maybe just a corky that kept him out for a couple of weeks. And on the weekend, he picked up six handballs, I think, all in the second half. He showed some signs in amongst traffic that he had some poise and he was sort of able to use his Irish background to sort of ease balance that he would have gotten from that game. And he showed some good signs, but didn't probably do enough to be a lock in all of our teams that some of us would have considered earlier in the preseason. Has averaged 80 playing AFL before in 2008. Apparently Bucks loves him. Maybe he might start as a stub or something. I'm not quite sure, but I think over the course of the season, he'll probably average pretty well.
Irish style of play. I didn't know that was a thing, Mark. But yeah, I do see him as a selection you should be making if he makes their best 21, and by all reports, he will, like Mark said. Bucks does love him, and they did give up a bit to get him back into their side. So he is penned into my team for now. And like Mark said, that previous 80 average has got to give you a lot of confidence. But I think the main reason for selecting Clark this year is just that looking at the backline rookie options, although there are quite a few with decent job security, the scoring's just not there. So I think a lot of people might be forced, if they want to spend cheaply for that D7, D6 spots, to be looking at players like Clark and Bauer as well.
Sure. So we may as well talk about our next player, which is Paul Bauer from Carlton. His position in the side probably got a benefit on the weekend with Jeremy Laidler going down. I think talking to a few Carlton fans, they expected Laidler to keep Bauer out of the side and to take his spot. So now that Laidler's out for at least 6 weeks, you'd think that Bauer would get a run for it at the start. Carlton supporters seem to hate him. He has a decent sort of scoring history with an average of 86 in 2009. What do you guys think?
Is that right? And Dygan's out as well?
Yeah, these guys are expected back at some stage.
Well, I mean, at least he'll get a chance to actually break into the team at the start. I think with Laidler going down, I'm expecting Bauer to line up for in their best 21. And I think, Mark, you mentioned this. Bauer's probably good enough to play in their best 21, but he just doesn't get much love from their supporters. He's a bit of a scapegoat. So I think once he actually gets a few games, he'll actually prove his worth in their 21. And I don't see him personally dropping out. And he has, in the past, been a pretty good scorer when he's actually gotten onto the park. I'm not sure if you guys have the figures there, but for $157,000, he does present value. And the fact that he's looking like locking down a spot in the first few rounds, I think most people should be starting him.
Yeah, I think another issue with his job security concerns from last year was that he had an interrupted preseason with a foot injury, I believe. So having that slow start to the year and then, you know, two guys in Dygan and Laidler coming in and playing similar roles, it made it very hard for him to be playing catch-up in the fitness regard and also trying to, you know, wrestle a spot off of one of those two. So I think now that the shoe's on the other foot, in a way, that he'll be the one starting the season fresh and in the team. I think it's the job of one or both of those other two to take the spot from him, and I'd expect him to have reasonably good job security. It's probably on a par with most rookies that you'd be considering, and given that he's priced cheaply, that's really who you have to be comparing him with.
We're going to cover four more backline options. We're going to start with Chris Newman from the Tigers, who has an excellent Supercoach history. He has averaged high 90s the last 4 or 5 years, has really good durability, although he did miss a few games last year. There's talk of him spending a little bit of time in the midfield. He takes that great role where he does the kickouts for Richmond most of the time, which can score you a lot of points if they're playing on from them. You'd think that he'd be a pretty reliable pick to be averaging high 90s again, maybe early 100s. Richmond do have a tough start to the season. If you pick Deledio, it's going to be tough to pick Newman as well, considering the buys and the other good players on buy in round 13. What do you guys think?
He is their captain as well, which is another point. He's shown himself to be a very consistent performer. I think every time we start the season, we look at Chris Newman and we think, what a vanilla selection. Where's he going to go? And he gets discounted a lot, but there's no reason he won't succeed as a pick this year. And again, there is, like you said, Mark, talk that he might even play some midfield time, which would be a bit interesting to see. I don't mind him as a selection, but again, it's hard to get him when you have Deledio as an option. But if not for that, he'd actually be a pretty good pick.
Sure. Now, Faz, what do you think of Dyson Heppel this year? Won the Rising Star last year, averaged in the early 80s, played all the games even though he was a first-year player and wasn't expected to. I think he's had a pretty good preseason. It's hard to get information out of Essendon this year, but I haven't heard anything bad about him. What do you think about him as a second-year player?
Yeah, well, generally it's a pretty steadfast rule that you just discount any second-year player from your team, but Heppel did play very unlike most rookies do last year, and I've also heard talk of him possibly moving up the ground a bit more, playing some more midfield time. With the return of Courtney Dempsey to the back line, you can see where that be space for somebody else to come in and fill the role that he was playing. If he can get more midfield time, he's obviously still only 18, 19 years old, so you'd expect natural improvement. I just love him as a footballer. I'm probably not the best person to ask, given I've obviously got a massive allegiance towards him.
Marcus, maybe we need an unbiased opinion here. Is he Fife Mark II?
I think that's a pretty big call just because of...
Are you saying that he's better than Fife?
Oh, no. I'm saying Fife is just that darn good. But Faz brings up really good points in that Heppel is definitely going to be a star midfielder one day. Did note watching Heppel that first week that he is notably a lot bigger. But I don't see him as a viable selection personally. If I was going premium, I'd want someone that's guaranteed premium. If I was to try and save money, I'd try and save more money than that in going, you know, a Lake or a Hargrave or Clark or Bauer. I don't think we're that stretched that you'd have to take a risk on a $450,000 priced second year player. But then again, you know, Fife did reap a lot of reward for the Supercoach that actually picked him, because for great risk comes great reward. But
you've got to realize that Heppel's averaged more than Fife did in his first year. He played more games.
Second year picks repeatedly fail. That's
Heppel. Heppel could win the Brownlow this year.
Yeah, I think that the fact that you're saying that probably turns a lot of people off Heppel, because now they all realize how biased you are towards him. He has as well lost that mid-def MPP. He is just available as a defender this year.
Yeah, I think Essendon will probably protect him a little bit, and he'll be eased into the midfield over a number of years. I did notice a lot of time last year when the game was in the balance or it was a really important centre bounce, Heppel was brought into the midfield, a bit like Hurdy used to be, and I think that's how they'll try to use him in the future. He is just that good.
Yep, and he's just a second year player. So with that reminder, let's move on to Duffield Subin before we get calls from our listeners that we're being too Essendon centric again. How do you guys see Duffield and Subin's prospects considering we have Broughton? I know a lot of people are concerned with all three of them just because any of them might get tagged out of a game and it'd just be a case of rotating players through as to who goes untagged and off the chain and scores those points week to week. So I guess people are worried about inconsistency when it comes to those three, particularly Duffield and Subin, with both of them looking like spending all their time in the back line this year.
Sure, I read very early on in the preseason that Subin was taking the kickouts for Fremantle and going to be their designated kicker, sort of in the Hearn role, and thought, well, geez, underpriced about $310,000. That's going to be a very lucrative role for him because he does have a brilliant left boot and should score pretty well from that role. But even in the mini games of the NAB, Subin was tagged at certain points, so that might affect his ability to score really well, because I think they will put someone on him a bit because he is so damaging. I know against the Bombers, he ran around the back of someone and kicked a 9-pointer. Duffield, probably a little bit different, really up and down. I'm not quite sure what happened to him last year. Maybe he had to take a more defensive role given the fact that Fremantle had so many injuries. But I mean, in some of the games last year, he was having 5 possessions. Certainly not great scoring if he's only going to get that many possessions. Maybe he might benefit under the new coach. What do you think, Faz?
Yeah, well, not a whole lot to add to what you said there. It's a pretty comprehensive wrap-up of the two. One thing I consider with Subin is that he had a broken leg that was keeping out of games last year, and that's often an injury that can sometimes ruin careers just in terms of the confidence, but at least take full 12 months to get fully over it, properly confident in your leg. So that'd have me a bit wary of Subin. Duffield, I got burnt in my league side for Supercoach last year. I saw him after he dropped in price. I thought he presented some value and just never really picked the scoring back up for the rest of the year. I'm not really considering either. They're also in a pretty awkward price bracket. You know, there's quite a few good options above 500,000, and my current mid-pricer is Brian Lake, and he's cheaper than both of those two.
One thing that really stands out to me about Duffield is really something that isn't really going to be remedied by a new coach, I don't think, is the fact that he's always done his better scoring at Paterson Stadium or Subiaco, and his poor games always come interstate. And there's a huge, huge difference in scoring if you look at those through across his career. And that's just something I don't see changing. Having said that, he has still managed a high average before overcoming his poor away games. Like Faz said, his price makes him hard to select. And last year, he just did look completely out of it. You think 5 possessions for a player of his caliber, does he have that same drive? I'd rather go for a player who I know will give me his all every week. Having said that,
he did that two rounds in a row.
Yeah.
Last year.
Very, very concerning. Subban I like a lot more as a selection. He has floated in and out of my side, but really with Blake and Hargrave, the emergence of the new Bulldog style, they have become very, very attractive options, and it's hard to really see any coach taking Subban over one of those two, or one of those two in addition to Subban. That seems like a lot of mid-price risk to be running. So just purely on that, it does seem that Subban will miss out, although if Lake and Hargrave went around, he'd probably be my mid-price selection.
Just looking online, I've noticed that Dyson Heppel is 501-1 for the Brownlow. Get on it.
And with that, I think we'll leave it at that for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, next week we're going to the forward line to look at the premiums and mid prices before the first lockout, that is the GWS Sydney game. We're going to be looking at our rock stocks, so that's a huge show, as well as the rookies from Sydney and GWS, but the rookie structure as a whole. And then for the last preseason show before that final lockout, we have the rest of the rookies, and we're going to look to the midfield for those premiums who we're going to be starting from that M1 to M4 sort of position. So three more shows left for preseason. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and catch you again next week. Thanks.
Yeah, if you've got any questions about the players we covered tonight, or you think we missed anyone, just post them in the comments down below and we'll be sure to get back to you.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook. See ya.